A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we start podcast, I say every week, but I have a Discord community. We talk about everything. I give away free records, free tickets, merchandise you get before anybody else. So the link is in the description. Go join, get involved. Also, if you listen to this podcast regularly or this is the first time, I'd love it if you subscribed and gave us a little review at the end if you enjoyed it. Hit me up on the DMs as well. Tell me if you liked episodes. Tell me who you want to hear. Be great to hear you. I love hearing feedback. So this week on the podcast, the one and only Monkey. I have been aware of Monkey for many years through being a broadcaster, a DJ, and a producer. And also I followed her for years and have kind of seen her fascination and her passion with football. For you Americans, that is soccer, but the real term is football. I've came across Monkey a few times in person, and she's always a super lovely person. And I've always loved our brief conversations we've had. And I've also really respected what she's done in her career. On the podcast, you'll hear kind of some career decisions that she made to kind of make things happier for her, which I really respect, and you don't often hear it in the music industry. So I'm gonna stop blabbering on and let you guys listen. Without further ado, Monkey, how are you, mate?
I'm good. Fresh from Ibiza.
Oh, really?
How are you? Well, kind of, yeah. I was there over the weekend.
Where did you play? So was I.
Oh, mate, I had a nightmare weekend. I didn't actually play.
Oh, really?
I went all the time there and I wasn't very well.
Oh, yeah, I messaged you and said rest up.
Yeah. And then I was supposed to play another show in the UK and I got caught in the airport madness. Did you get caught in that?
Coming out, going to Ibiza, I did.
Yeah.
But luckily it didn't really affect me too much. We just had to stand and run away for like 3 hours, so it wasn't too bad.
How was your show?
It's actually really good. Yeah, I played at Elro, which was nice. Where were you supposed to be playing?
Defected.
Okay, cool. Where are they doing their parties at? Eden still?
Yeah, Eden this year still. I got one more next week and then that's it, I'm done.
How many have you done?
10 shows in Ibiza for this year.
Oh, that's a lot.
Across different clubs, yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah, man, it's a lot. It's like a proper marathon, but it's mad because the first one was like in May, so it just feels so long ago.
Yeah, the seasons have just got longer and longer, haven't they? Like, it started in April this year. Like, as of, like, IMS, when IMS hit, it's then Game On through to October.
Yeah, which is like bonkers. What's that like? 8 months of the year or something? It's crazy.
Yeah, 7 months. I remember when it used to be like 5 months at a push.
I remember at one point it was like three.
Yeah.
It was like summer and that was it.
Yeah, but they just got to make that money, don't they?
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, wait, people want to come here all year round? Okay, we'll throw parties. what's your views on Ibiza?
In what way?
Generally, for you, as like going and touring as an artist, how do you find it?
I think, I guess my first views on Ibiza when I was a kid was like listening to Radio 1 and listening to that, yeah. You know, Radio 1 in Ibiza, this massive weekend, all the DJs having a great time. It's kind of this like spectacle that you'd look forward to every year.
Yeah.
Even as a kid, like not being old enough to go, just like listening on air. And then the first time I went to Ibiza was actually like to play. Like I didn't go as a punter. I was like 20 or 21. And I went and played. And the first time, if I'm honest, the first time I went, I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I was like, I think I was playing somewhere in San An or something. You know, we're talking 10 years ago. I was really in and out. I didn't like get to experience the island much. And I came back and I was like, right, I didn't quite understand like the hype.
Yeah.
And the more I got to know the island over the years, the more of the parties that I went to, the more diverse they were. So like the big ones, you know, Space.
Yeah.
And then the big ones like Pikes and the little secret after parties and stuff. Going to the north of the island, also understanding like the very like British, Brits abroad side of it. Like once I experienced it collectively as a whole thing, I was like, yeah, this is amazing. And then, so I think it will always hold a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
But then I've taken friends there in their like, you know, late 20s and they're just like, mate, it's so expensive. And it just feels like Vegas.
Yeah.
And I kind of get it. Like, I kind of get it. I don't know. What are your views on it?
Yeah. I kind of similar to you, like Ibiza. Have you ever done a season?
Not a full season. As in, no, never as a work or anything. Yeah. Like.
So I did a season. Well, my first time out there was my first show out there when I was 16, and 17 I like saved up and like just went for like a month by myself and just to kind of network.
Yeah.
And then 18 was my first summer, and then I did 18. I was 18 to 20, 21, I think, where I did like full seasons. So like, that was like a part of my life where it was just that was like the Ibiza part of my life. And
yay.
I was a resident and I had a job there as well and just did like, it was just a very special time of my life. But also I think because I'm sure it's similar to you where like you've experienced it over the last 10, 15 years, say, notice the change of Ibiza and you notice like everything in life, everything changes and everything isn't what you remember it. And for me, like, there's some amazing venues now, but it doesn't feel like it did it doesn't feel as magical as it did to me 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that's normal, right? But I think, like, I miss the, like, Space on a Sunday parties.
Yeah.
I miss the Manumissions. I miss the, like, really... I miss the parties that you can't get anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
That you used to get that in Ibiza, and Ibiza now just feels like, as much as I still love it, it just feels like it's another destination place and there's nothing really too magical about it. However, it is also very magical as an island, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always like, I guess a little bit in fear of sounding... Oh, it was much better in my day.
Of course. Do you know what I mean?
But, you know, I just think it's different. That's all. I just think it's a different experience. And, like, I'm not saying it's better or worse. It's just different.
And also the crowds have changed, right? Like it was, even 10 years ago, it wasn't about the VIP culture unless you were at Pasha.
Yeah.
And Pasha was that VIP club, but they did it so well that it was just like accepted. But I remember like the minute they started trying to put VIP tables in clubs, people would like backlash at it, and it just wasn't part of the culture. Now it is. And I understand it. Like, very wealthy people want to come and rave, which is amazing for us because it means that we all get paid more. It's just the facts of what of the business. And I think it's amazing. But yeah, like, I understand why people were like, it's practically Vegas. It's way better than Vegas, in my opinion. But it is still just like, it's expensive. It's really expensive.
Yeah. I remember having like, I think it was the first year I played Radio 1 in Ibiza.
Yeah.
I remember we went to watch, it was like Pete Tong back to back, Sasha. Privilege or something?
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember exactly where one was. And after that, a group of us went to watch the sunrise near like the sea, and there was like this little cliff.
Yeah.
And as the sun came up, we all went to like jump in the water. And literally, as I was about to jump off this cliff into the sea, I turned around to my partner at the time and I was like, you know that Ibiza moment I've never had? And he was like, yeah. And he was like, I was like, I think I'm about to have it. And like, that was my first like special trip.
It's so true though, isn't it? There's like, there is something magical about the island that like everybody has something.
Yeah.
And generally it involves sunset or sunrise, right?
Yeah,
it's amazing.
The delirious part of the night now.
Yeah, because you've just been raving all night or all morning or whatever, and it's just kind of like a start of a new day. And I, like, for me, my residency, I used to play sunsets every night, and it was just a kind of pivotal moment in the day when the sun sets and it's like, okay, now it's time to rave. And it was just, it's just like, it is a special place. I think we can just get very jaded by touring in and out there every week. Like, the hotels aren't that great. Like, the airport's terrible. So it's like, we're going to Ibiza comes with a lot of like first world problems, put it that way.
Yeah, totally. No, I spent 9 hours in that airport this week. That was a test. That was a test.
One more week, mate. One more week.
Yeah, no. I've never heard the whole airport ever in my life collectively cheer before when they announced that the plane was no longer stuck on the runway. Like, I've never actually had that experience before. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's like when you land in Ibiza and everybody claps. And you're like, it's the only place in the world. It still happens.
Yeah,
it's amazing. So how's your summer been?
It's been good. It's been really, really busy. I think last year, so the sort of first full year after COVID, I took a very conscious step to like not take as many shows as I typically would, and be like really mindful of how many shows I'm taking, what the shows that I'm taking, just for a bit more like balance in life, basically. And this year I kind of did it again. Like, I toured mainly in summer, not really in the winter. But I really went gung-ho this summer. I think to test the waters again. And it was great. I had a really, really good time. But I think it was a lot. It's like a lot on the body, you know? If you're playing, like, Australia, New Zealand, Bali, America, Europe, like, it's all fun and games. It's wicked. But I think on your body, it really takes a toll. Especially if you're like a little bit more in tune with yourself. So I feel like my nervous system is like starting to decompress. But it's going to take a couple of weeks, I think.
Yeah, it does. It's really weird. And I think also, especially like the length of time you've been touring, for me, it's like, I don't really like taking time off personally. Like, I really struggle with like having weekends off up until COVID. And then COVID kind of, I learned how to take time off because we were forced to. And like the last like end of August to now has been pretty quiet for me, which wasn't purposely done, but it ended up to be quite quiet for 3-4 weeks. And I've like really enjoyed just like having a Friday night in, or like seeing my family on a Friday night, or seeing my friends on a Friday night, or just being able to like cook and like not have to worry about getting up early the next morning to get on a flight and things like that.
Yeah,
and I was texting my manager last weekend. I was like, just before I was going to Ibiza, I was like, mate, this sounds really like ungrateful, but like, I can't be bothered to like go and work. And he was like, well, get used to it because you're back touring again soon. And I was just like, yeah, it's like, it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because don't get me wrong, I love it. When I get to a show, I absolutely fucking love it. It's the best. But there's still those moments. It's like, it's still a job, right? Do you still get that?
Yeah. But do you not feel like, rather than feeling like ungrateful, it's like you're quite grateful for this weekend that I can just be still.
Yeah, I love it.
When you get back into it, it's like, I feel like it's almost like I enjoy it more. Then rather than when I was just like every weekend for 12 months and then it's like, okay, you take 2 weeks off in January and then you fucking go again for 12 months. Like, it's actually madness.
I think that is my life, if I'm honest. Like, yeah. And I love that. I love that. And I want that realistically. Because it's what I love to do. And I think that's the thing, is when you get used to taking time off, which I'm not really a fan of going on holiday or anything like that. It's not really for me. But like, I think when I finally get into the swing of it, it's like, oh shit, now it's all gone. Now I'm back on the grind and just know that it's just going to be tiredness for the next however long. But I love it as well, if that makes sense. It's a really weird thing. But I when I was talking to you at Ushuaia at the beginning of the summer, and you kind of were kind of mentioning where you started your other business in sport and kind of took the conscious effort to not take as many gigs, I was like really intrigued and I wanted to go deeper into that in Ushuaia, but we couldn't. But like, I kind of want to get to, I want to know the process, because I'd love to understand it. I do understand it, but I'd like to understand it more.
Which part?
Why? Like, what was the, what was the process of like, okay, I'm only touring in the summer and okay, I'm going to start another business. And because in this industry, it's very much promoted that it's all or nothing, right?
Yeah.
And I think it can be quite an unhealthy kind of mentality, because it's not all or nothing, realistically. You can have, I don't necessarily agree with work-life balance, because what we do is just, it's our life. And there is no balance for that. But yeah, I'd just be really intrigued on like how the process started and why it started for you.
Yeah, I guess I think pre-COVID, I was assessing like what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like, okay, do I want to, you know, in 10 years' time when I'm 40, do I still want to be a DJ? Like, I think people get a little bit scared, especially when you've had like success, to like ask that question. I also think it's really strange that you just do the same thing for your whole life. I don't think it's like a bad thing necessarily. If you love it and you can, that's great. But yeah. I think it's healthy to like chop and change. And for me personally, it's a bit more interesting.
Yeah.
Just from a personal perspective. So I think pre-COVID, there were like thoughts going on in my head, like, okay, is this something that I want to do forever? Is this something I want to slowly like sidestep out of? Is there something I can do in tandem as well? But at the same time, I thought no, because I had that mindset of like what most of the music industry is, in that is like you're in or you're out, and that's it. There's no, you can't be half baked. There's no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you've got people around you as well. You've got like an agent, a manager, and that, you know, they're all in, so they expect the same of you, even though technically they work for you, but. And then COVID happened and I was like, well, fuck, now I'm not doing it. and there was really not much we could do really, you know, except make tunes, but there was no shows going on. So it kind of like forced me into this slower lifestyle that I thought maybe I wanted. And it really tested me, because for the first time in 10 odd years, I hadn't stopped at all. It's just go, go, go constantly. And it was quite challenging, actually. I mean, it was It was more challenging than I thought it would be, put that way. I know it's challenging for everyone, but I think just sitting still and being in your own headspace for that long was like pretty eye-opening.
Yeah.
And just previous to COVID in 2019, there was a Women's World Cup in France. And for those people that don't know, I play football for Dulwich Hamlet, which is a team that play in like a semi-professional league. So we play against like Fulham and, you know, in cup games like likes of like Wimbledon and Millwall, we play on Sunday and, you know, these teams that you would have heard of. And football was like my first love when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Not music. It was football that came first. And I went through several academies and then realised it wasn't a job for women and that's all I wanted. So once I realised I couldn't do it as a profession, I kind of just let it go.
Yeah.
Then came music because I heard people like Annie Nightingale on the radio. I heard people like Annie Mack on the radio and I was like, oh shit, no, this is something that actually exists for us.
Yeah.
So that's why I chased it. And obviously I love music. When I was 25, I got back into playing, which had an effect on me both personally and professionally in that I had to look after myself more.
Yeah.
Because those two worlds massively collide. And it made me think, oh, maybe there's some skill sets that I have broadcasting that I can use in football as well. And can sort of sidestep that into that world because women's football is getting bigger. I love it. It's another passion of mine. That's a really long way of putting it. But so in lockdown, when we had nothing to do, I approached a couple of friends and I was like, all these sort of like football media companies are coming to people like us to ask questions because they don't know about women's football and they don't know how to tell the stories because they've not seen the, they can't look through our lens. Only we can look through our lens. We should just start our own thing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how the idea came about. I'd just done a podcast for a company called Copper 90, which is quite a big like footballing community online. For the Women's World Cup in 2019, went to live out there for 6 weeks. We reported on the tournament every day. It was so much fun. It was wild. It was like wild, wild. We're doing a podcast every day for 33 days.
Wow. That's a lot of talking.
Yeah, it's a lot of talking. And it was wicked. It was actually my producer, Lucy, who produced my Radio 1 show.
Oh, really? That's cool.
That show, yeah. Because Copper didn't know too much about broadcasting and podcasting. So I was there as like a presenter, but also like as a consultant basically.
Yeah.
And so in lockdown, I was like, let's just start our own thing.
Yeah.
We have nothing to do. We literally have nothing to do. My other mate who is part of In Motion, the company is called, she's a touring drummer in a band.
Wow.
So she was still. And our other friend, Solon Hickman, she works for a football charity called Football Beyond Borders. She kind of connected us all because Solon's the one I came to first idea, but me and Solon play football together. And that's where that idea came from. And we had so much time to like ruminate on it, ideate on it, throw ideas around, create our mission statement, all this like quite corporate shit that I'd never done before, if I'm being really honest. Yeah. Like these were all very new terms to me. I didn't go to university. I've never worked in a corporate setting. Like the closest corporate setting I've worked in was when I worked for a major label with A&R.
Yeah.
But this whole like, you know, business plan, marketing, like fuck, it was all really new to me. But it was really interesting because like, I didn't think I could be interested in it.
Yeah.
It's so alien. But I learned like so much. And then we had that weird period of like coming back to gigs, didn't we? Where it was like, we were coming back to gigs, but we kind of weren't.
Yeah.
And we were in some countries, but not here. And, you know, it was all like very half and half. So at that point, it gave me an opportunity to still kind of go be playing shows, not that many, but then also work on this other thing.
Yeah.
And it was around, you know, the Euros was coming up here, home Euros. We started to get a couple of jobs working for, you know, big sort of brands, Adidas, Puma.
That's cool.
Just we knew pitching ideas. And then it became like that summer of, when was the Euros? Last summer, was it? 2022? Yeah. About 8 years ago now. 2022 was the first summer where, like, I was really busy with Emotion, but I also had loads of, like, a fair amount of shows. And it was pretty much like a 50-50 balance of doing both.
Nice, yeah.
And for the first time, I was like, fuck, like, I can do both.
Yeah.
Like, this whole time I've been told you're either in or you're out, and that's just not true.
Mm.
Like, it just, you have, kind of have to just be brave enough to do it.
I agree.
But I'm also really, really lucky to have a sick team around me that believe that as well.
Yeah.
My agent, Andy, he works with Defected. We've been working together for quite a few years now, and he completely gets it.
Yeah.
And I think that is quite key to be able to have the freedom to do that.
I think it's also by limitations to me create more opportunity to a certain extent. And I think if you say I'm only doing 10 shows a year, those 10 shows have got to be fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it allows you to say no to so much, and kind of make yourself feel a little, make the perception of yourself as an artist kind of more rare in a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I think
I was kind of just like, I just don't want to be going to Leamington Spa on a Friday. Like,
yeah,
it was really fun, but that's part of my life is done now.
Yeah, no, because I think there's also that thing, isn't there, in this industry that you just do it to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
where's
yeah.
the meaning for this? And the questions are like, what am I doing this for? Like,
yeah,
you're just, if it's just to pay the bills, it's like, that's not why we started.
Yeah.
So it's like,
and it's so easy to say yes, isn't it?
Oh, like, my god, yeah. Yeah, if someone's putting some cash in front of you, and realistically, it's what we do is fucking easy. In the grand scheme of things, we play a few records and go to a hotel, generally a nice hotel. We get fed and watered. It's generally pretty easy, and somebody's paying you money. You're like, yeah, fucking easy. But then you do that every week, three times a week, four times a week. 52 weeks of the year, and you're like, okay, actually no, you don't need to do that.
Yeah But on the flip side, you know, this my other company has also helped me realize how, like, fucking great DJing is.
Yeah,
because there were points in some projects where I'd be on a call with a massive football club and there'd be 20 people arguing over which player is going to be holding the Pepsi can, and I'm like, I literally couldn't give a fuck.
So what is your company? What is In Motion?
So In Motion is essentially like a creative collective or agency.
Mm.
The brands and football clubs mostly would come to. So the sort of projects that we work on, I've never worked with Pepsi, by the way. I don't know why I pointed that out. So we've worked with like the FA, the Lionesses, the Euros, the Home Euros last year. There was a video that announced the squad for the tournament, and we creatively directed that.
Oh, cool.
It might be they need a strategy to sell tickets for a certain game, and we'd help with the creative side of that. So, like, Arsenal is the club that we helped with that.
Yeah.
Venus might be doing a campaign around, like, feeling more comfortable in your skin.
Yeah.
And that might be tagged with, like, a football player, and we'd come in and help creative direct that. So, that's like, cool. Yeah, so it's essentially, like, telling stories through a creative way with brands,
which is still very artistic.
Totally. Yeah totally. So like that's definitely my bag in the trio of us three, and then we obviously have people that we pull in for like strategy and you know, directors and all the rest of it. The flipping long calls with the clients and stuff, like, I struggle to have patience. From that world, it's like different.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? Because you're in a corporate world, you're dealing with corporate people, whereas when you're in the music world, you're dealing with mostly creative people, so people just get it easier.
Totally. It's just different. My partner, she works in technology, which is very, you know, that is
corporate.
Her job herself is, she has to be quite creative, but not in the traditional sense, yeah. I guess. But sometimes when she's like listening to calls, not to do with emotions, to do with like, you know, music stuff.
Yeah.
And she, we'll talk about it. And she was like, where the fuck's the accountability in this like contract or whatever? And I'm like, babe, it's just full of cowboys and crooks. Like, let's
yeah. It's so true. I was talking to, I can't remember who I was talking to the other day, but they were talking about that they did like some work. They work with like an athlete in business where this, I think it was like a swimmer that swam in the Olympics started a kind of business consultancy brand, because obviously, like, as you're aware, like being an athlete, it kind of takes a lot of like dedication and like routine and all of that. And this, my friend was talking to this athlete and was like explaining the music industry to this person.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, that's not a business, that's gambling.
Yeah, pretty much.
And when you look at it like that, it's like, yeah, you know what? Like, there's nothing in this industry that like, where it can be in business, where you put this much in and over time you get double out,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You can literally put this much in and get nothing out of it 10 years down the line. And then maybe the day before you quit, you get everything. And you earn more money than you've ever earned. Your records are more successful than ever. And then everybody wants you. And there's just no way to say, like, what is going to do well or not.
Yeah.
Have you noticed with, like, going, with working in motion, that it's very different in, like, the more corporate world?
Yes and no. I feel like there's a lot of transferable, like, skills that I've learned. Just from, like, you know, being in the music industry. But there's a lot more strategy. I feel like there's a lot more strategy.
Yeah.
Like, very well thought through strategy. Like, and like less. I guess everything's a gamble, like a business, a new business is a gamble. But there are just a lot more, like, hard lines.
And how do you do that strategy? How do you even start that?
So we have a strategist. We work with a strategist, yeah. And her job essentially is to come up with strategy to present to a client. But I've also learned working with corporates, like, a lot of it is just who can talk the loudest in the room.
Really?
Yeah, totally. Like, totally. Like, I always felt like corporate world was a world that, like, I didn't belong in.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a creative. I don't have any degrees or qualifications. I didn't finish school. Like, it's just you wear suits and like, this is like, that's not me. I don't get it. I don't belong there. But in actual fact, being in it, I'm like, no, I can totally fucking take space up here, because it's not too far off. It's just a lot more official.
Yeah, that makes sense. But also you can talk very well. You can hold yourself. You're successful in your own business, in what you've done previously. So there's no reason why you can't be successful in that.
Yeah, totally. And I think as I've got older as well, I'm way more comfortable being like, I need to ask questions because I don't understand this.
Yeah.
Rather than just like pretending to know what I'm talking about.
Is that based on ego or is that confidence?
Maybe a bit of both.
Yeah.
Like I'm confident enough to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'll come back to you later. Once I figured it out, or I need to ask somebody else. And then you kind of just have to let go of your ego a bit, don't you?
100%. Takes time, that, though.
Yeah, totally. I think that's just getting a little bit older as well.
Old age, which is fucked. Yeah. Old. Game tapped out.
It's old.
So with the whole, I want to kind of go back to the, like, the switching it up from 50% of the year touring, 50% of the year not. During that 50% when you're not touring, are you strictly on in motion?
Not necessarily. Yeah, I might play a show or two. It really depends what the show is. If a great show comes in,
yeah,
let's do it. Because it might, you know, it might be, that might be my only show of the month. Like, it's not going to take away from the stuff that I'm doing. I'm doing within motion. But I think the other way around is much harder. Like, when I'm touring, I just don't have the capacity to work on projects within motion.
And how does that affect the business, though?
Well, at the moment, we're quite lucky because we all have other jobs.
Ah, okay, cool.
So Al, the drummer, is currently on tour in North America with her band.
Amazing.
Salon is, you know, full-time with FBB. So, like, we can pick and choose what projects we do.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, which is great. I think long-term, if we want to grow the business, which is, you know, the aim.
Yeah.
You look at, like, we'll probably be looking at, like, investment.
Mm.
And then it might be a bit more time. But, you know, do I slow DJing then down, or does Al or whatever, you know? It's just, it's all just, all have to scale it to what we want individually, I guess.
Yeah. What's the end goal for you?
Within motion?
Within life?
In general.
Because, it feels like you're very focused to getting somewhere.
Does it?
Yeah, it really does, because I think there's not many people I speak to that, like, makes these conscious decisions.
Yeah.
You're still young, if you know what I mean, as well. Like, it's these decisions don't get made this young.
Yeah. I can see. I think maybe I'm a little bit older at heart. Mm. I've always been a little bit ahead of what I wanted or originally, like, planned out to do.
Mm.
You know, when you're young and you're like, right, 5 years time, I want to be doing this and whatever. I don't actually really have that kind of, I don't know if you do. Do you?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah, I think so. It does change occasionally.
Yeah.
And it would have changed from what it was 10 years ago. I have like a career goal, and then I have like life goal outside of like what I want to do outside of music, but not. Yeah. That's not based on touring.
And they're always like, the goalposts are always moving.
Yeah, definitely. And it's more so like time. It's like when this can happen, that can happen.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just intrigued with you because I've never spoken to somebody that's like, I've just stopped touring for half the year. And I know I'm just using that in a short term. It's like, I'm intrigued because I am trying to understand it.
Like how it's done or why?
Both.
Okay.
Both, yeah. Really.
I think why, because I was questioning if I was enjoying it as much as I did. And I think I wanted to find out if I stepped away a little bit, if I missed it.
Mm.
And which I did.
Yeah.
But I also came to the realization that, like, when I did do it all the time, I guess unlike you, I didn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah.
When it was like so, so intense. Because, like, I think we easily attach what we do as a job, especially a creative one, as like our identity.
100%.
Which it partly is, right? Like, of course it is.
I think but also don't have an opportunity to not as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when I stopped at Radio 1, I was like 26, 27. So I spent like a good 6 years on Radio 1 from quite a young age.
Yeah, really young.
And when I stopped, I felt like I had a bit of like a identity crisis.
I understand.
It was like a real Zoolander moment. I was like, who am I? I'm not a monkey from Radio 1. Who am I?
Yeah.
And I think I needed to be comfortable with like knowing that I'm fine if I'm not a DJ, or I'm fine if I'm not playing football.
Yeah.
I'm just like, if I want to quit and be a gardener, like, that's fine.
Do you ever have those like wake up feelings of just like wake up and go, fuck it, let's just go do something else.
Sometimes, sometimes. Sometimes I'm just like, I just want to like start a farm.
Yeah. That's literally my end goal.
That's same. I want a small holding. That's same. Which is fucking wild because it's so opposite to what we do.
I know. But maybe that's why.
Maybe, yeah. I feel like sometimes I feel like at most peace when I'm like out in nature.
Yeah, 100% same.
Like I feel most.
Yeah. I went for dinner last night with a friend and we walked up to Bristol Suspension Bridge and it was like pitch black nighttime, and there's something about being high up away from everybody and looking down and kind of just thinking about life and talking about life, and there's a level of me never wanting to come down.
Mm.
And that feeling of like during COVID, where I live, I'm really fortunate. There's like a lot of hills and I spent a lot of time in nature, and every time I was up on the hills by myself, it was like the best feeling ever. And then coming down is that almost that coming back down to reality. And it's like that not wanting to come back down to reality, not because I have a terrible life, I have fucking the best life ever. But there's still that like that thing of like, I don't want to walk past somebody in the street. I want to just be alone and just like it. Obviously it's not healthy and I wouldn't want that forever, but there's something about that, right? About being in connected in nature that it just feels special.
Yeah. I have a friend. One of my good friends, he lives up the road. He's like he's a director, but we met each other at rave, and he used to like be my videographer like back in the day. He's left me since. He's a big boy director.
Promoted.
But his brother used to work in the city and he had like a city job.
Yeah.
You know, well paid, all the rest of it. And he didn't like it. And he quit, went back to school, and now he's a park ranger.
Wow.
In Wales. And I fucking rate that like so highly. Yeah. And he's like, yeah, I don't earn as much, but I'm really happy.
Yeah.
And like, that fucking takes balls, man. Like,
really does. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that the idea of success has like changed for me over the years.
Mm.
So if you would have asked me like when I was 16 or 17, you'd be like, right, I want to be on this lineup. I want to be this up by the bill. I want to be earning this much. I want to be selling this many tickets. And that lasted for a really long time, right? Because that is also drilled into you as success. In terms of like industry.
Yeah.
But now I'm just like, I really want to enjoy what I do.
Yeah.
And if I can make a living out of that, live comfortably, fucking happy days.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's kind of just as simple as it is for me.
It's a fucking amazing goal though, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many of our peers want that?
I feel privileged.
Yeah, how many of our peers are like at that point in their life where they're just on that rat race of touring and not really knowing where the next step is? And like also that, like, I'm sure you've seen it in from radio, but like how many people come and go, and how many people are still like have huge hits and then still chomping on that success of the huge hit 5 years ago and still trying to recreate that moment again. I really respect that is the thing for you. It's like, just be happy and whatever it takes to kind of do what you love and make sure that it stays what you love, because there is a level of the passion turning into a job, your passion turning into a job, it's tough to keep it a passion.
Yes, yeah, it is. I know some people who like don't want to necessarily make it a job because they're scared of that.
Yeah.
I completely understand that.
Do you have a thing though, because like from listening to you, like you wanted to be professional in football.
Yeah.
you then wanted to be professional in music, you made professional music. Like, is there a theme where, like, every time you have, like, not a new passion, but something that you're really passionate about, do you have a thing where you need to turn it into a business?
I just think I don't like the idea of not enjoying work.
Yeah.
Because, like, we as humans in society, like, we spend so many of our hours having to work.
Yeah.
Because we put food on the table, because we have to put a roof over our heads, because we have to, you know, people have kids. And I'm just a little bit determined to just not hate work. Like, and I know that that sounds like it comes from, like, a really privileged place, which, you know, right now it is.
Yeah. Is it though? I question that, because I think
a lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You can still, I don't know, yeah, maybe it is, but I guess I question that, like, everyone can find something that they enjoy to do, to work. Like, somebody might love, I don't know, being a bin man. They might love it.
Yeah.
And if they love it, they love it. And if it gives them the life that they want, then so be it. I think it's what we kind of, not everyone, but what we get used to is people like, oh, fucking, I got work today. I got work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Got that. But it's like, is that the case of society telling us that we just have to work to earn money? Or is that a case of, like, no one really being taught how to, like, go and find their passion and go and do something that they're really passionate about? Which we're very fortunate because we've experienced that. I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's so many nuances to the I can answer that question, and it's not just black and white. I think it depends on, like, your environment growing up as well, and, like, you know, the opportunities that you've been given, your economical background, your ethnicity, like, all these things, they work in whatever way. I think I was a little bit, like, naive when I was younger to certain things, like being a woman in a male dominated industry when I was younger. I didn't actually think about it that much.
Yeah.
But I think I was naive about it because I was so young, and that kind of helped me.
Totally.
But, yeah.
I think if you don't look at it as an issue, it's not an issue, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I always just kind of, like, felt like one of the boys a little bit.
One of the lads, yeah.
How
does that sit with you now, though?
I mean, I think now I've learned, you know, now I'm a bit older and I've learned certain things, how things in society are set up for women, like, it's quite depressing.
Yeah,
if I'm being honest, I'm kind of, like, one of the rare few that in my period of time, I guess, being a DJ in the UK, like, managed to make a long career out of it.
Totally.
When you think about, and it was so weird because when I was younger, like, literally when I was, you know, 16, 17, I used to genuinely think, oh, well, other girls just don't want to DJ because, like, they're just not into it.
Yeah.
when, like, that absolutely is not the fucking case. You know, there were hardly any people to look up to. There were some, but there weren't many.
Yeah.
Pretty, like, daunting environment to go into as a young woman. It just personally didn't affect me so much, but, yeah, like, for other people, it would massively.
Mm.
But, like, and that is... me thinking that as a young woman is a reflection on our society.
100%, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. Even me as a young woman, I'm, like, taught to think like that, which is just fucking bonkers when I think back at it. But, yeah, I mean, my perception of it has definitely changed.
Yeah. No, I think also the longer you spend in the in industries generally, like, you learn more about it and you see the fucked up side of it.
Yeah.
How was the Radio 1 gig? How did that all kind of come about? Because that's where I first came across. That's where I first came across you as a artist, as a person.
Mm. So when I left school, I think I was 16 or just turned 17 or something. And I knew I wanted to get into radio, didn't know anything about it. And I went to go get like a internship with a station, like a local station. It's called Jackie FM in Tolworth in like South London.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that the guys there, so Jackie used to be pirate in like the 70s. The guys there, they knew the people from Rinse FM because I think they like helped them out a little bit because Rinse at the time was still pirate.
Yeah.
And they were like, look, we obviously know that music for over 40s isn't your bag. Have you ever heard of Rinse? And like, do you want us to put you in touch with them? So I was like, yeah, great. I was super, super young. And at the same time, I was listening to like a lot of specialist radio on Radio 1. So Annie Mac, Toddy T, Benji B. I think Judge Jules might have still been on air at that point.
I just did a podcast with him today, this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What a fucking mad career that guy's had, by the way.
Right, crazy. Crazy.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I went to meet the guys at Rinse. And I was expecting this, like, tower block in East London somewhere. And I knocked on this door at, like, it's like an office in Brick Lane. And I walked in. And everyone was listening to like jazz music and on Apple Macs. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I sat down on the sofa. There's only like five people in the office. Sat down on the sofa and then Ollie screamed, like bowled in the door. And I'm like 16, 17, so I'm like a fucking super fan, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dubstep's like just kind of blowing up. Screaming banger. And he sat down next to me and I didn't say anything. I kind of just sat there. And he turned around, grabbed some biscuits and turned back around to me and was like, do you want a hobnob? And that was like my first Rinse FM interaction. And yeah, I stayed there until I was 21, so like 3 or 4 years. And I got a show on there when I was, I think, 19 or 18.
Wow.
Someone didn't turn up, basically. And Genius was like, do you want a fucking show or not? And I was like, okay. And I just jumped in. And then I ended up keeping that slot. And then Radio 1 picked me up from there. That's how they got me. I'd kind of got to know the crew at Radio 1 by that point.
Yeah.
I'd like played my first show, like DJ show.
It's quite a small community back then. Oh, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Especially in London. Yeah. Like, you're talking about the same 200 people.
It's special though, right? Especially
back when... Then, honestly, like, I feel so happy I was part of what was going on in London then.
It was...
Like, it was wild. We had Ford at Plastic People on Thursdays. You know, you'd see Boy Better Know, Screamin' Benga.
Yeah.
All these, like, amazing artists who just roll in on a Thursday. And I used to help... I used to get drinks for DJs in the club on Thursdays. That was kind of, like, my job. And then, like, Katie B blew up.
Yeah.
Overnight, became a pop star. And I was her touring DJ for a bit. And I was
really... That's cool.
Yeah, I was like 18, 19. Yeah. So anytime she did a PA, like I would jump on decks for her. I mean, I didn't do anything. I just pressed play on three records. But just to be a part of that.
It's amazing. It was like a movement then. That era was like very very relevant culturally, whatever that word is I'm trying to fucking say, for now. It shaped the industry to what it is now. And now, I don't really think in dance music in the UK, apart from the jungle days and the hardcore rave scene, there wasn't really a time like that from then.
I hold those years in such fond, fond memories. I was DJing, I was driving DJ Zinc to gigs in my Peugeot 206. What the fuck? That's what an experience. And then we also had a party in West London as well, called Yo-Yo. Did you ever go to that?
No, I didn't, no.
Mate, this party was just wild. So it was run by these two guys, Leo and Seb, who I think at the time were both A&Rs. And it was this tiny club in Notting Hill called Notting Hill Arts Club. Could probably only fit 100 people in. 150 at max. And I remember turning 18 and being I need to go to this event. Because it was the days of I think Twitter had just started, but MySpace was still a thing. And the way that you had to get on guest list was message this person on MySpace.
That's so cool.
And if they got back to you, then
you're in.
You're on the list, basically. Or you had to know someone. And it was just mad, the people that would play there. Mark Ronson would DJ there. Casper would DJ there. I saw Nas play there. Fuck. What? Mental. Yeah. And that was my first residency, was there. And I used to play hip hop. It was just a sick time, man. I don't know. I'm sure stuff like that still exists now.
I was about to say that. Do you think things like that still happen?
I think so. It's just,
we're just not part of it.
Yeah. And it's just probably different. It's there aren't that many small clubs like that really.
No.
In town.
It just costs too much to run. Clubs aren't good at making money.
Yeah.
Well, the people that own clubs are not good at it.
I think the culture's probably just changed a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, people who are 18, 19, 20, early 20s now, they've got their own thing going on.
Of course.
We're just not part of that era.
Yeah, I think the whole, in London at this moment, it's the whole lo-fi kind of house crew. Barry Can't Swims and the Mile Grabs and things like that, they kind of have this thing that I think is going on a little bit more than what, kind of how it was back then, but
just different. And genres. Jungle and stuff is
it's back.
Kids are fucking playing jungle again.
It's back. Big sick. Time.
yeah.
It's fucking cool.
It is sick. It is wicked. But yeah, those are very, 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 very fond memories.
So you were doing weekly shows at Radio 1?
Yeah, I did a weekly show for 6 years.
What, on Sunday? Sundays, isn't it?
I did Thursdays and then I started in the residency.
Yeah.
And then I switched to Sundays, Sunday nights.
How was that?
It was amazing, man. When I decided that I wanted to be a DJ, that was kind of my end goal, if I'm being honest. Yeah. I was I want to be on Radio 1. Because it wasn't I just want to be a DJ. I was I want to be a broadcaster.
Mm.
And what is the end goal for me? It's Radio 1. And my whole 5 year plan or whatever was right, by the age of 25, I want to be on Radio 1. That was my plan. By the age of 25, I'd already been on Radio 1 for 4 years, which is fucking nuts.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But then when I left, I kind of just was I don't know what to do with myself.
How did you get through that? What was the process? Why, obviously if you can, but why did the Radio 1 thing end? And how was that mentally for a 25, 26-year-old to deal with that?
It was really hard. It was a schedule change.
Yeah.
They made a load of cuts and it was a schedule change. And it was really difficult because it was my show was hitting good numbers.
Yeah.
The numbers were climbing. And it was kind of weird because the meeting was it was a breakup when it was it's not you, it's us. Really bizarre. And I was in there on my own as well. I didn't have my manager in or anything. But I remember texting and calling a couple of people in that immediate after the meeting. It was my partner.
Yeah.
Rada, one of my best mates who works in music, and
yeah,
long time ago, before that she used to be my manager, and Annie Mack, I think I texted her. I was really devastating. I was gutted. I was really fucking gutted. But it's actually one of the best things that happened to me professionally, I think.
Really?
Because I got so pigeonholed into, I just thought Radio 1 was like everything.
Yeah.
Now we know that, like,
it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was really refreshing, actually. And then Defected picked me up like straight away.
Wow.
They brought me into the office and they were like, "We love your show. We listen to it all the time. Do you want to come and do our radio show?"
That's so cool.
And it was wicked. And I had never done like a just online radio before. But their numbers are fucking nuts.
It's mad how big they've grown that show.
Nuts. Yeah.
And I think the difference between the BBC have huge numbers, of course.
Yeah.
But it's only been in the last 5 years that they've kind of gone global with like the BBC Sounds app and things like that.
Yeah.
Whereas Defected for years has been global. And
it's mental.
And you build a fan base worldwide.
Yeah.
Which is, for longevity as an artist, is so important.
Yeah. Worldwide, like the Defected fan base are so committed.
Yeah.
It's great. So Defected, I don't know if you know, but they also sponsor my football club.
Oh, did they? Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So Wes, who owns Defected now, is a massive West Ham fan.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll go to games together occasionally, and the club were looking for a sponsor. First the women's side, and then the club as a whole.
Yeah.
Defected sponsored the women's side, and then a season later, they sponsored the whole club. So.
So cool.
You want me to show you a shirt?
Yeah, show me.
Oh, I think it's upstairs. I'll send you a photo.
All right.
But what was I talking about?
Wes.
That's it. I'll go to like shows in fucking America or Bali or whatever, and there's like someone wearing a Defected Dulwich Hamlet shirt at the front always, and it's mad. Like, it's mental.
It's amazing what they've done, and I think there's not many brands out there that have done what Defected have done for artists. Like, there's like arguments with all these record labels, like Defected, like Tool Room, CR2, like there's countless where like the counter arguments, like the deals aren't good for artists, blah 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 blah, which you're going to get that in the whole of this industry generally, because no one's ever going to be happy with the record label. But genuinely what they've done for the scene is unbelievable.
And
for artists, the amount of artists they've fucking built and grown and given a platform to, because they can.
It's a really, like, not just the community as in the sense of, like, the Defected community, like, fan base and stuff, but just the people in the office and who, like, run the day-to-day stuff. Like, I can honestly say they've become, like, really good mates.
That's awesome.
Because they're just really fucking good people.
Yeah.
And, when I joined Defected, so Colluded are the agency side of it. They're, like, rebranding and everything, but they have this agency arm, which my agent sits in. And when I joined them a few years ago, just before COVID, I sat down, went to the office, we went through like, you know, all the usual stuff. I got handed this bit of paper and it was basically asking about my mental health.
Mm. Like,
do you suffer from any like mental health issues?
Yeah.
How is best to support you? And like, luckily I could leave that page blank.
Yeah.
But I've never in my whole career by any agency or management been asked that.
Yeah.
And I just was like, wow, that's a level of care that like I fucking respect massively.
Yeah. I didn't know that. That's amazing. That is really special, because this industry is not good at dealing with that.
No. Yeah. It's a really,
it's not set up to deal with it at the end of the day.
It's literally like, it's like the perfect recipe for a disaster.
Yeah, it's especially when you like get into like the whole agent, when you get into the business side of it, especially in like America, let's say, for instance, because like the agents in America are just business. They're literally hustle. They're like whore you out as much as they possibly can, really,
right.
Which is amazing. But yeah, like the corporate, from what I've found in America compared to the UK, the corporate side of the business is just insane. Like there's like,
you spend so much time there as well, haven't you?
Yeah, I spend most of my time. I can barely get booked in the UK. Like this year, really? This year I played two shows in the UK.
No way.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't even have an agent here now.
Really?
Yeah. I left.
Is that by choice or you left?
Yeah, I left. I was with somebody and then I wanted to split up my territories because I had another agent that wanted to work on, like, I had a couple more agent offers that wanted to work specifically on territories.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to go with them, and the agency that I was with was like, well, we don't want you to work with anybody else. And I was like, well, we're off then, because I want to. But yeah, like I find the UK scene for myself very, very hard to kind of be part of. Because I'm not really part of any crew. Like, I know I've done stuff for like I've done stuff for Trick, which is like popping off now, but I'm not a Trick artist. I don't sound like anything on Trick.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really kind of fit with me, as much as I love Patrick. He's a fucking legend, such a nice guy.
Yeah.
But like I'm not really part of any of that crew, or like I've not done BBC Radio 1. I've not had a show there. I'm not part of any like cliques in the UK, which I find is very much the way you tour in the UK.
Yeah, it is. This is actually one of the reasons why I felt like I started to hate it a little bit, like pre-COVID, because I was like, I didn't feel like I wanted to be part of anything in particular. Like, I guess my crew before was, you know, I'd hang out with like Annie Mac and Toddler T and like you know, the Radio 1 crew basically.
Yeah.
But then when I came out of that, obviously your career changes a little bit. And I was kind of like getting forced to like hang out with people that I just had no interest in hanging out with.
Yeah.
And I found it really weird. Like, I found it really strange. Like, I don't want to stay at 6 a.m. at this after party just to go talk to this one person. Like,
just to try and get gigs.
Yeah. I'm just like, nah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I should have to do that.
Mm.
Like, I understand the hustle. Like,
of course.
I get it.
Yeah, of course.
But on the flip side, like, when I did find, you know, Defected, essentially, like, that's become my crew.
Yeah.
But I just felt like I had so much more in common with them that I didn't know existed, I think. Yeah.
But I also think from an outsider's point of view, from looking at you as an outsider's point of view, your career isn't just Defected.
Yeah.
Which I think is really important, because I think there's a lot of artists that just stay in one crew and then that is their identity. But there's no way of getting out of that. Then you're kind of stuck for life. If you can like put your toes in and out, and of course, like, your agency's part of Defected, you're going to be playing Defected shows. But like, you release music on your own label, you release music on Defected, you release music on Tour Room. Like, you're not just Defected, which I think is really healthy for longevity.
Yeah, I think that's probably a lesson learned from the BBC days.
Really?
Yeah. And also, like, the fact that, like, Defected celebrate that I'm a bit different.
Yeah.
Just like they do with their other artists. Yeah. Honey Dee, Sam Divine. We're all fucking so different.
Yeah.
But we're also part of it.
It's really nice as well, though, because, like, the sound... Defected always had a sound over the years. It always had a sound, but now it's kind of changed and evolved a lot in the last, like, maybe for me, like, pre-COVID a little bit. It kind of when they had the rebrand with MK, and then they had Cola with Camel Fat, and kind of things evolved a little bit. It's not like a classic Defected sound. It's like you're getting multiple artists that are their own artists that just do what they want to do. And obviously they start, they have multiple record labels under the Defected branch, under the Defected like head. So like, I think what they're doing is really interesting for the culture now.
Well, it's just way more exciting as well. Yeah. Like, they just released a Skepta remix of Todd Edwards.
Yeah, so cool.
Like, that's fucking sick.
Yeah.
I mean, Mass Tiempo is a jammer and Skepta, but, you know, just... They just have their ear to the ground. They're just in touch with what's going on. And they're not afraid to not pigeonhole themselves.
Yeah.
I think.
Which is important. It's important. Because if you do, you just get stuck. We've all got friends right there who've done it, right? They sign to one label and that's all they release on, and then they don't own the record label, they're not the head of the record label, but they just tour with that record label, and then eventually something happens and that record label ends or isn't fashionable. Like, I had it with Dirty Bird for years. Yeah. It pigeonholed me so much, and don't get me wrong, I thank Dirty Bird so much for what it kind of allowed me to do in my career. But still now, like, I still get that, like, people pigeonholing me into that kind of sound and genre, although I've never really played the Dirty Bird sound, really. And I haven't released a record since 2018. But people, you still get that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I understand.
It's difficult because I feel like at one point, it's like you had to be put in a box.
Yeah.
In order to, like, be on a stage at a festival or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Actually, to be honest, at one point, when I first started going out partying, raving and stuff, it felt a little bit more androgynous in that, like, someone might play a jungle tune, but they also might play a house tune.
Yeah.
And they also might play a grime tune. And that's what I actually kind of loved that.
Yeah.
And then I felt like slowly it was like, right, you're a house DJ or you're a grind DJ or you're a bass DJ. And I don't know if that's like getting thrown out a bit more now.
I think, I agree. There was a period where you had to be part of something and you had to have an identity. And that's what I liked about Dirty Bird. It was purely about that. Like, in one night on a Dirty Bird party, it would like be drum and bass, jungle. All of the techno, it would be everything, which was to me is amazing. But that kind of got unfashionable when you like had to make tech house and you had to do something. Or now I feel like it's like, if you're not doing like Latino tech house, or you're not doing afterlife sound, or you're not doing trance, where the fuck do you fit? I think it will always gonna have that, but I feel like now, especially with like the level of what like Fortet and Fred Again and Skrillex has kind of done for the scene on a commercial level,
is
allowing DJs to kind of open up a little bit more again and kind of be a bit freer. And you're seeing that with the music that's getting written.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing some like garage stuff and jungle stuff. I'm like, this is fucking sick.
Yeah.
And I know it's like, you know, some of the samples we've heard before, but it's still really quite refreshing.
The samples, we've all heard it before because we're old in the industry.
The
kids haven't heard it, which is funny. Like, I don't necessarily like all of it. I was like, went to the gym this morning and they're literally playing trance classics. I'm like, this is fucking awful. Like, please, please stop playing this. But like, the kids like it and it is what it is. So like, you can't take that away from them. We just need to accept that it's not our era to listen to that.
The trance stuff, I'm not mad into. No. If I'm being honest, there's like an odd tune where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is sick. But as a whole, like, I don't think it really piqued my interest. Like, back, obviously, I was a child, so it didn't.
Yeah.
But like, it didn't really pique my interest there back then. I was more into like quite London sounding,
grimy.
Yeah, beats. Grime, garage, jungle, like that kind of thing. So that newer stuff like piques my interest, but the trance stuff. It's not really massively my bag. You know that tune, Children?
Yeah, old Robert Miles.
That, I fucking hate that song. And not because I think it's a bad tune, not because I'm like, this is rubbish. It's because when I was a kid, I used to fucking do gymnastics. And my first competition, I got asked, that was my song to do a floor routine to. And I just completely fucked it up, and forever, just whenever that song gets put on, it just like haunts me.
I think somebody like remade it like not so long ago and put like a pop record to it. I'm like, this is awful. But I do like the original.
I just get like weird gymnastics, like PTSD from that.
I was never into the trance, but Faithless were like the reason why I do what I do. So yeah. Like there's a level of trance in what they did to a certain extent, yeah. Or like rave. I was never into the like Paul Van Dykes or.
Nah, I was into like Prodigy and Chem Brothers. Chem's and that was all the stuff that my mum listened to.
Really?
Yeah, 808 Stay and yeah, and then my uncle, he listened to like a lot of garage, like a lot of EZ mixtapes. My mum's side of the family, they're like relatively young.
Yeah.
My mum had me when she was like still a teenager. So that's like the musical upbringing, I guess I had.
Yeah.
So it all kind of is reflective. And then like the grime and stuff, that was kind of like mine when I was younger.
Identity.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you ever make it?
I fiddled around with some stuff recently, actually.
Yeah.
But when I was on Rinse and stuff, like that's kind of what I used to play.
Yeah.
I would play house records, but so some of my Rinse shows that are still online somewhere, I think it's all like pretty bassy, and like I would start at like 1:30 and then it would like build up, and eventually, especially like during festivals and stuff, it would be like jungle and hip hop.
Yeah, because that's what I thought of you.
Yeah,
like as a Radio 1 presenter, as a radio presenter, like that's what I thought you were or knew you as.
Yeah, it was a bit of everything really, but I kind of had license to do it because I was on the radio. The difference.
Yeah,
I wasn't a producer yet, right? Yeah. And so people want to be like, you make this, you play this. Whereas when you're on your radio, you're like a tastemaker, so you're just like championing sounds, and it doesn't necessarily need to be a particular one. That was kind of like the beauty of being a broadcaster.
Yeah, totally. Freedom.
Yeah, there was way more freedom.
And also people look up to you, right? They value your opinion.
Yeah.
For me, like, I don't know if you, like Zane Lowe for me was just the broadcaster, the best broadcaster, and still is for me personally. Like, I just love his interviews. I love like what he's done for music. Like electronic and non-electronic, realistically.
I think those were the sort of like Radio 1 golden days, weren't they, really? Yeah. Like that era of
broadcast
was sick. Even like the daytime people, you know.
Yeah.
Grim stuff.
Are you wearing a Whoop?
I am wearing Whoop. Are you wearing a Whoop?
Yeah. Oh. Mine looks battered. Do you like it?
Nerd alert from the both of us.
Do you like it?
I've been wearing it for years, man.
Same.
I've been wearing it for like 4 years, I think. Mm. Yeah. When they first came out. Yeah, I do like it. It's a bit of a data overload sometimes.
Yeah.
There's been times where I've taken it off for like 2 weeks.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I've never taken mine off.
Really? How long have you been wearing it for?
Since COVID. Since 2020.
Okay, yeah. So a while as well.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes it's like I'll wake up and I'm like, yes, going to get cracking in the gym. And then I'll look at my Whoop and be like, oh, I'm in the yellow. Or I'm only just in the yellow. Maybe I shouldn't. Instead of like, listening to like my body. So I mean, like sometimes it dictates too much of what I do.
Yeah.
Rather than just like sensing it out. Or both.
I'm the opposite. I just don't listen to the Whoop at all.
Okay.
But it's like you're on 2% recovery. And then I'm like, yeah, but I feel fine. So I'm going to go train. Right. But then it's, but then it's also like, why do I wear it?
Yeah.
Like I just like data. I think, I think that's what I've worked out. And it's the.
Have you ever looked at it while you're touring and just been like, what the fuck?
Every week.
Yeah.
Average sleep, 3 hours.
Yeah.
You're like, fuck.
Yeah, then, I had this one weekend where it was just like nap. I don't know, no sleep at all.
Yeah, and then you listen to like an Andrew Huberman podcast or something, like just a random podcast about sleep and how like if you don't get sleep, you're gonna like get Alzheimer's and you're gonna die young and you're like fucked. And I'm like, Jesus.
Great. I'm just taking 10 years off my life, but the gig was really worth it.
It was definitely worth it for that few grand. Mate, we just had an hour and 15 and I feel like we could talk all day.
I know, it's been really fun.
What have you got coming up for the rest of the, bearing in mind this won't come out until October, I think. What's your plans for the rest of the year? How's your touring kind of balancing going? What's your plans for InMotion, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so we're into winter now, I guess, aren't we?
Today is actually the first day it's cold, or it's cooler for me. It's like 14 degrees here where I'm at, and it's like, I'm like, yeah, I dig this a lot.
No, this is your kind of weather, is it?
I fucking cannot stand hot weather.
I'm more of a summer person.
Really?
You know, when it's like fucking 40 degrees in London, it's not the one.
No.
No, not at all. But yeah, October, I'm winding down now.
Nice.
The year for the winter. I'll still be playing like a couple of shows here and there yet to be announced. But yeah, I'll be in the studio now, really. Sick. Yeah, and then be playing a lot of football. So amazing. That's kind of my year. And InMotion, of course. But we're back to like the pitching.
Yeah.
Pitching part of the job.
The hustling. So,
yeah, the hustling, yeah. Love it. That's me.
Love it. Well, mate, you're always welcome to come back if you ever want to chat, promote anything, hit me up. Thanks for coming on. Keep safe and have a good rest of the year.
See you soon.
Cheers, mate. Peace.
Bye.
And that's a wrap. Big love to Monkey for coming on. Loved it. Thank you all for listening. Go join the Discord. Link is in the description. Please share. Please give us a review. Please subscribe. Till next time.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.